Ah, it's Hobbo here. Welcome to tonight's edition of Who's Talking? Hobbo, Frank, and Darren in the studio for the Merry Christmas edition of Who's Talking.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho. Ho, ho, ho. The jolly man is about to get on the sleigh in a few days here. We have some exciting guests tonight to keep you informed and entertained, and Frank is going to let you know who they are.
For all you Wahoos and ACC fans, we've got Dan Bonner, one of the top analysts in the entire TV world, talking college basketball.
I was afraid you were going to say one of the former top players.
Yeah, that would have been a bit of a stretch.
Well,
but that's
you did call him Bambi once on air. It's amazing he didn't slug you. We also have Chris Horn, the Sabres recruiting expert, as well as a regular contributor now to the Sabre. And Chris has joined us every year since we've been on the air. And the same is true for Dan Bonner.
Yeah, two friends of the program, as they say. But
we're very thankful for that. And we're going to kick it over here to Darren so he can explain how all our listeners can follow the show either by radio or...
Many ways.
Yes.
Many ways. Give us a call if you want here in the studio tonight. You can be able to reach us at 804-345-0910. That's 345-0910 here in the studio. We are, of course, streaming live on thesaber.com and also foxsportsrichmond.com. And if you need to listen to the show using your smartphone, download that free iHeartRadio app. And that way you can listen on the go. Also, check us out on Facebook. Just check for Who's Talking. See what's going on. See what's happening on Facebook. And if you want, send us a message and we'll put you on our email list.
Well, while we're waiting for Mr. Bonner to call, hopefully he'll call here momentarily. What I would call a get-the-kinks-out game on Saturday against Robert Morris. Cavs got off to a little bit of a slow start. It was probably the kind of game you want coming back from an 11-day exam break. Clearly, they got it in order and won handily, 40-point margin or something like that.
79-39.
And held another opponent under 40 points. But playtime is over.
Yeah.
It gets serious starting Wednesday night out in Berkeley, California.
Hey, I want to kick something over to you. Hobbo, to this point, Tony Bennett has been playing 10 players regularly. They all played a lot of minutes equally, pretty much. What do you think is going to happen going out there to Cal?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, and I think Mr. Bonner is on the line. I may defer and throw that one up. But, yeah, I think the bench will shorten a little bit. He's got 10 guys playing 10 minutes. I did the numbers. Ty Jerome played 16 minutes the other day. That gives him exactly 100 minutes in 10 games, so he has 10 minutes per game. But, yeah, you would expect that some of the key players are going to be on the floor a little more. But, at any rate, Dan Bonner has joined us. Dan, as always, we thank you. Former WHO, longtime TV analyst, and one of the good guys out there, and a personal friend of Hobbo. That's probably the most important thing, I would think.
Well, Hob, I get on the show and immediately you call my judgment into question. Don't tell people.
How well? We're going to cut you some slack. All right.
Well, listen, I was looking at the ACC preseason prediction. Duke, North Carolina, Virginia, Louisville, Syracuse, NC State, the top six. Do you still see it that way? Maybe you didn't see it that way at the outset, but having played most of the non-conference schedule, how do you see the league breaking down as we get into league play here in another week or so?
Tim, you know, I think it's the non-conference part of the schedule has been very interesting because, for the most part, the schools in the ACC have had tremendous success. I think that as you look at the teams that you just mentioned, you have to sort of scratch your head a little bit about Syracuse, that they really haven't played up to the level that people expected from them. I think Pitt and Notre Dame have both been better than people thought. I think Miami hasn't been as good as people maybe thought that they might be. I mean, they're 8-2, so they haven't been terrible. But their wins haven't been as, impressive. Running up the score, I don't know exactly what you look for when you're playing all these guarantee games. But I think my basic impression is that Duke, North Carolina, they look like pretty good teams to have at the top of the standings. Syracuse, maybe not as good as people thought. Georgia Tech, better than people thought, possibly. So I just, when we talked before, I said I thought it was going to be a great conference season, and nothing has happened in the non-conference part of the schedule to change my mind there.
All right, look at this from Virginia's standpoint. The loss of Austin Nichols, what impact will that have from your judgment?
Jim, that's really hard to say. I think the folks at Virginia thought that Austin Nichols would give them a legitimate big-time ACC-level scoring threat on the inside. And if indeed he would have provided that, then that's obviously a loss for Virginia. They're going to have to figure out a way to score inside. But since Austin Nichols never played for the Cavaliers, I think it's a mistake for people to say, well, what would he have given us? Because you don't know. And I think Tony Bennett does really well, he and his staff, at not worrying about what they don't have, but focusing on what they can do with what they actually have.
Dan, this is Frank, and Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you, Frank.
Hey, you know, to this point, Tony Bennett's been playing 9 to 10 players virtually every game. What do you think is going to happen out at Cal? And then, more importantly, what will happen at the Yum Center in Louisville a week later?
That's really a hard question to answer because they don't really have any player who you can consider to be a dominant player, a guy who, when everything's on the line, you know he's going to have the ball, you know he is going to be your star. And so they're going to have to do things by committee, and maybe that committee means playing 10 guys. I don't think that it's outside the realm of possibility that you could play 10 guys, and you could play 10 guys successfully. I'm not sure that they will do that, but I think that they're going to try to mix and match and get creative with what they've got, and they may end up playing 10 guys on a regular basis.
You know what's funny, just an aside? I was thinking about this last night and studying the minutes over the last 6 or 7 games, and I was thinking, you know what? He really doesn't have a set 5 that he plays at a crunch time in a game. So he's still looking for that, isn't he?
I'm not sure, Frank, whether he's looking for that or whether he has confidence in his guys that whoever seems to be playing well, whatever the matchups are that night, whatever the matchups are in that, you know, you're talking about the last 5 minutes of the game. In the last 5 minutes of the game, I think that he's comfortable with the guys he has on his team, that he's willing to play any of them in those kind of circumstances, depending upon matchups.
Well, you know, I always look at it from the standpoint, you got 200 minutes to split up among whoever you play, and London Perantes at the moment is playing under 30. I think when they get into the ACC schedule, his minutes are going to go above 30 because he's one guy that you want on the floor a lot. Interestingly, he's committed 13 turnovers in 10 games. You and I committed 13 turnovers in 10 minutes. You know, I mean, it's and the guy's a point guard.
I was going to say in 2 seasons.
Well, but anyway, yeah. But speak a little bit about London, and then the other thing, speaking of guys, Cal Guy, he is now 16 for 26 from three-point land. That's 62%. You know, he may end up shattering Tony Bennett's record if things stay on this course. So talk a little bit about London and Cal Guy.
One of the things I think you have to be careful about with London Perantes is by insisting from a fan standpoint that he do things he's not really capable of doing, you run the risk that he won't do, that he won't perform well in those areas where he's really good. Obviously, he's a very good ball handler. You talked about his lack of turnovers. Obviously, he's got great leadership skills. He shoots big shots, but I don't think that anybody should expect him to be the kind of guy who takes over a game because that's just not what he does. And I think the most important thing that Tony Bennett has to do with London Perantes is just let London Perantes play to the strengths that that young man has, and there's lots of them. And Kyle Guy, you know, the interesting thing about him, yes, he can shoot the three, but I was impressed when I saw him in person. I thought he did a nice job defensively, and that's not an easy defensive system to learn as a freshman. I thought that he did some pretty good things with the basketball. He's going to have to be able to do things other than shoot threes, because even if he had it before shooting 62% in the non-conference portion of the schedule, he's lost the element of surprise. And when you get into the conference play, then everybody's going to have a little bit of a different wrinkle about how you get out and guard him. So it'll be very interesting to see how he adjusts to the adjustments that will be made in his direction.
All right, the most important Kyle Guy question, are you, Dan Bonner, a fan of the man bun?
You know, I think it's a very strange look, Jim.
You know, as I recall, that was not the Dan Bonner look when you were playing.
Well, you know, if he would just not put the hair up in a bun, he would look like somebody who played in our era. He's got 70s hair. I saw him in practice, and I thought, huh, you know, he wouldn't look out of place at all in 1972. But with that bun, he, you know, it looks like he would be out of place anywhere. But, you know, I think it's funny that it's, you know, that's become sort of a mark for him. And as long as he's enjoying himself and playing well and, you know, Tony's happy with it, it's just an interesting little sidelight.
You know, back in our era, there was a place at Barracks Road called Staples Barbershop. Apparently, yep, that must have shut down in the intervening decades. There must not be any barbers in Charlottesville anymore.
Well, there may be barbers in Charlottesville, but, you know, obviously their skills are different since they put guys' hair up in buns. Yeah.
Well, you know, the one thing, back to the Virginia lineup and the bench and all that kind of stuff, in some of the games that have been contested, Tony, at the end of the game, you know, I look at the 200 minutes. I also look at who's on the floor at the end of the game at crunch time. He's gone to a four-guard lineup. Do you think that's something Virginia will utilize more, given the strength of the team being in the backcourt, assuming matchups will allow it?
Jim, I think that's absolutely correct. I think the four-guard lineup is possibly their best lineup for certain things. I think they can pressure the ball better that way. I think they can keep the ball in front better that way. I think their four-guard lineup might be a better offensive lineup. But, you hit the nail right on the head. It's all going to depend upon matchups. I just don't see them going to four guards and forcing, say, a Florida State that has a lot of big guys to, you know, go small. I think you go four guards against some of the really big, strong teams, then they're just going to pound it inside and beat you to death. So I think that it'll all depend on matchups. But Virginia's biggest issue is going to be putting the ball in the basket. That has been an issue for them at times in the past. And with this team, they're going to be really good defensively. The defense is going to keep them in every single game they play, I think. I don't think they're going to get blown out too often. The question is, are they going to be able to score when they need to score to get over the top?
Hey, Dan, you make a great point there or two. Are you surprised that Florida State is out of the gate 12-1, 13-1, whatever they are, and do you see them attempting to crack the top four this year?
I think Florida State for the last couple of years has been an interesting case. They've certainly had talented players, but the pieces just haven't fit together very well. And, you know, they're out of the gate pretty quickly, but they haven't really played like a killer schedule. They lost to Temple. That's their one loss. Their really good win is against Florida. So I think that, you know, they've shown some signs in the non-conference part of the schedule. I think, you know, coming to Charlottesville on New Year's Eve, I think that's going to be a real test for them. I think playing Virginia Tech at home in the game after the Virginia game is going to be a real test for them. And then the game following that is Duke. So I think if you look at that part of their schedule, at Virginia, Virginia Tech at home, Duke at home, if they win two of those three games, then I think you say, okay, they might really be a factor in the ACC race. But I'm telling you now, this is going to be a tightly contested conference race. Nobody's going to go waltzing away with it.
All right, so we've got one of our listeners, believe it or not, just texted me, and he said, what about the national scene? And the questions would be, who have you seen and like, and who have you seen and thought, wow, they're not very good?
Well, on the national scene, if you look at the top-ranked teams, I don't think I've seen anybody who I thought, geez, they're not very good. I mean, that Kentucky-North Carolina game yesterday, that was basketball at its finest. I mean, for heaven's sakes, we're playing that game in December, and I was thoroughly impressed with both of those teams. You know, UCLA has played extremely well to this point.
And yes,
they're much better than I thought they would be. Villanova is really good. Kansas.
Did we lose him?
Whoops. I think we may have lost the connection. We'll try to get that back. I tell you what, while we get it back.
No. Hold on. While we're thinking about it, Gonzaga was just on. And if you haven't seen Karnowski, or however you pronounce his name, that 7-foot-tall behemoth down low, he's a handful.
Well.
That guy, Mark Few has got a guy that he can throw the ball inside to, and teams have got to respect him. He's got a good touch for such a big guy. He can spin either way. And he looks more menacing than he really is. The interesting thing to me is he's got perimeter guys too, and he's got a backup big man that comes in the game who's pretty tall and blocks shots.
Well, the Zags are always a player at the national level and a team that more often than not gets into the Sweet 16. We've reconnected with Dan Bonner. Dan, you're right. The North Carolina-Kentucky game was special. Before we go to break, any thoughts about the – well, I'll tell you what. Yeah, let's go ahead and get this question. The Kentucky-Louisville on Wednesday night in Louisville. How do you break that one down?
Boy, I think that's going to be a heck of a game. Kentucky's got to be able to handle Louisville's pressure. And Louisville's got to be able to score inside effectively against that Kentucky defense. But if Malik Monk is going to get 47, Louisville just might as well stay at home.
Yeah, they really, Kentucky, the talent is just off the chart. I tell you what, we got to go to break. Can you hang with us for a couple of minutes and we'll
get
a couple of final questions in before we let you go? We're visiting with Dan Bonner. You're listening to Who's Talking. We'll be back after these messages.